Welcome to the Messenger Podcast. I'm Addison Bevere, and today we have a special show for you. As always, our goal is to help you develop into an uncompromising follower of Christ. And in today's world, that means we have to be willing to tackle tough topics through the lens of faith. There's been a lot of conversation around the topic of abortion lately, so we wanted to share an interview my mom, the one and only Lisa Bevere, did with my brother Arden, talking about how we can discuss abortion with both compassion and truth. Let's dive into their conversation. Today, we are actually addressing a bigger topic, and that is the topic around abortion.
Yeah.
And I do want to just say off from the beginning that this is a topic that we know can be kind of, it can be upsetting to some people. It can be discomforting.
It's not a neutral topic.
Yeah, it's very personal to some people. And we want to just give you kind of that disclaimer from the beginning. But, you know, we know that we're not supposed to shy away from harder topics. And we want to show, you know, hey, what does the word of God really say around these situations? And we want to open up discussion because we don't want the world or government or politics. We don't want that defining. We want the church defining. We want us as children of God being able to define what the stance should be and what the conversation should be around abortion.
And have a conversation that isn't people yelling at one another and attacking one another and shaming one another and judging one another and really actually having a conversation that really touches on a little bit deeper issues.
Yeah, no, 100% agree. And I just actually want to start out by just kind of reading off statistics so that we can kind of set things up and that you guys know kind of the magnitude. I mean, if you don't already know, the magnitude of what we're talking about. But in our generation, so adults under the age of 30, say 63% say abortions should be legal in all cases. So that's meaning that could be full term. That's all the way up to, 9 months basically. And then a majority of adults in their 30s and 40s, so 59% are saying that as well. Just 44% of young Americans say abortion goes against their personal beliefs compared to 60% of Americans over 65.
Wow.
So hear this, 60.1 million abortions have been performed since 1973. That's staggering to me. That boggles my mind. I mean, in my mind, that's an entire generation. I mean, 60 million abortions. And so we just wanted to talk around this and just get the conversation going. And I know this is a large topic, but we really feel a burden on our hearts just within recent light of some events. You know, recently this beginning of this year, there was everything that happened in New York where the legalization of having abortion up into pretty much your due date was finalized.
And even in some cases after the baby was born. And so
that was Virginia.
Yep. So I think that this conversation needs to happen because we love women. We love women and we want to respect women. We want to respect their bodies, but we want to talk about, is abortion really the best thing for women? Is it really what's going to make them feel empowered? Is it going to make them feel safe? Is it going to make them feel good afterwards? And is it really a woman's right? And of course, it's always your right to make a choice, but you want to make a choice where you are well informed and you have been able to weigh your decisions one way or the other. And I feel like the church hasn't done this well.
No, and I really do believe that from what I have seen, there's been a lot of condemnation around the topic and a lot of hurt and a lot of inability to actually talk about it. I mean, the shame that women see, and that's not what we're trying to do. I mean, we want to come out from the very beginning. We're not, if you're someone who has maybe had an abortion or had a family member close to you, we're not trying to shame. We're just trying to have the conversation around it. And I think oftentimes what we see so much is there's two completely different sides that can just be fighting at each other, that can be arguing, but we want to have the conversation around what does the word of God say? And then also just have a conversation of what this actually looks like. What does it boil it down to? Is it men trying to stifle women's rights? What's going on?
Basically? Or trying to mess with people's bodies. It's one of the things I used to get in trouble with for saying, and I would still say it and I would still be willing to get in trouble with it, is that the church cannot be pro-life only during election year. It has to be pro-life always. It needs to be pro everybody's life and every stage of life. And people, it's really interesting. They're okay with saying, well, I voted. Well, voting isn't enough to be pro-life. Pro-life means that you're going to have to get messy. You're going to have to help. And, you know, it's interesting, Arden, just 2 weeks ago, I sat on a panel, and there was five women on the panel, amazing women, teachers, leaders in their sphere of life. And two of the five women on this in this church panel had had abortions. Yeah. And the one woman described what she experienced. She had gone through, she had gotten pregnant by her ex-husband, and he was actually married to somebody else. And she already had a child. She was a single mother, and she found herself so ashamed of her choices. And so she went to the abortion clinic, and she said what she met outside were Christians calling her baby killer, murderer, you know, and nobody that was there at the, now I know there's other situations, but this is what this woman experienced.
Yeah.
Nobody was there to say to her, hey, can I just talk to you for a moment? Because the signs and everything, she felt more compassion in the clinic than she felt outside of the clinic. And she said, as she left, shame and guilt began to overwhelm her. And then again, she was attacked going in and attacked going out. She regrets the decision, but she said the church has got to do this better.
Yeah.
She you know, she just said, I wish that I had never done this. And she said, I wish somebody could have been there to put their arm around me and said, this isn't your only option.
Yeah.
I want to help you have some other options. But you know, we can't just tell somebody, you can give your baby up for adoption and not be there to help them with the process.
Yeah.
And it would seem that the church is against premarital sex, which, you know, we believe that sex should be in covenant.
Yeah, which we agree.
You know, and if sex is in covenant, then you don't have all these problems.
Yeah.
But the church is against women getting caught.
Mm-hmm.
So women will actually experience a lot of shame if they're an unwed mother in the church. We found that a lot of them, we were looking at the stats, 65% says that they felt the church members judge single women who are pregnant. Shouldn't those be the women that we're celebrating for making a courageous choice that they said, I'm going to keep a baby, even though I know that this is going to be a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what's happening. Yeah. Church members are more likely to gossip about young single moms than to help them.
Yeah.
And so if you don't change that, why would they think they can come to the church and the church would be a safe place and that their kids would be welcomed and that somebody would help them if they weren't in a season of raising their children, that somebody could help them find that baby a good home where they would be loved and respected if they hated the mother? You can't say that you love the baby and you hate the mother.
Yeah.
That's just not congruent with being Christian.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, you just covered so much, which I love, and everything you're saying about not gossiping. I mean, we take it so firm at our culture here that we've created at Messenger International and with Sons and Daughters is that we don't gossip. Like we don't do that. We don't shame people out of their mistakes. We don't do any of that. We try to love. We gossip. We just actually have something where we say we gossip well. And I do think about, well, what would happen if we as a church started gossiping well? Like what would change? The shame going away from people's life, where we're not saying, hey, we're not just saying like, oh, hey, if you did this, you know, we're just going to kind of sweep it underneath the rug and we're just going to ignore that happened. No, it's just that we're not going to allow people to live in that shame any longer. And there's something that I even saw from both perspectives. It's from both sides of how both sides can be doing it better, where, you know, it's not just like when I saw everything that happened with New York. I remember I went to the governor's, I went to his Instagram, and I saw that there was Christians attacking him, and they were just attacking him and you know, saying there's no room left for you. Like your eternity has been set, kind of thing. And they've just attacked this man, which, you know, that is doing the opposite of what we are doing. And I loved it. One preacher wrote out and he said, this is the whole part of it. He said, we have democracy. And he said, we have the ability to be able to vote these people out. And he said, so vote them out. But he said, but you need to pray.
You don't curse them.
No, he said, you need to pray for these people. And when we need to think about it, you know, that's what the Bible talks about, is you pray for your enemies rather than going straight to them and attacking, slandering them. I mean, we're not doing any better by doing that. And so I think it's just, and as a church, we need to really step up into this role of, hey, we're not, you know, we're not so like, I love what something you say. You said we need to not be known for what we are against
but what we're for.
What we're for.
Can I read you something? Yep. When all this came up, I had a mother reach out to me, and you know, and in all truth, I have actually forgotten this story, but in 2002, I was in Chicago, and this mother said, I was at a women's conference when I told you I was pregnant with my seventh child and I was contemplating abortion. You asked me, why are you not married? And I said, yes, I'm married, but I'm struggling with this issue. You were trying to understand why I was leaning in this direction of abortion. I said, it was my seventh child. It was because of shame, of being ridiculed from people, because my husband and I had so many children. You embraced me. So I didn't say, I can't believe you're going to murder your baby.
Yeah.
You embraced me and reinforced me that this child was a gift from God and had absolutely nothing to be ashamed of. You told me you're going to have this baby and everything is going to be all right. Then you took me to the pastor's wife and asked her to get me counseling. Hmm. I had my son because of you, and I will forever be grateful. While everyone stood in line to get pictures and autographs with you, I stood in line for your help, and you helped me. You prayed with me and for me. And his name is Oscar Lee Jackson IV. He is now 16 years old and the joy of my life. He sings and he dances. He's an actor and an evangelist for the Lord. He has dreams and visions and ministers for his generation. And she said, did I mention he's also handsome? I love you beyond words. You know, and so one person opening up to somebody they didn't feel would judge them, and that one person speaking God's life to them. I didn't just say, be at peace and be filled. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. I connected her with someone who could walk with her on this journey.
Yeah,
and because of that, there is this thing. And I think we can be honest that what we're doing isn't working.
Yeah.
What the church is doing right now, it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And I know that some of that is darkness, but it's not the people in the world that are getting abortions.
Yeah.
There's people in the church getting abortions.
Yeah. Well, we have a stat saying, what is this? Well, we have a stat saying here, every four in ten women are churchgoers.
Well, and you would think about that. If I had two
abortions
out of my five, if we'd had 10 people on this stage, there could have been four.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. And you mentioned a statistic. You're saying that
I was reading that if the church girls would stop having abortions, it would cut the abortion industry by more than half.
Yeah.
And part of that is they don't want to take birth control because they feel like it's premeditated sin.
Yeah.
So they actually feel so much guilt that they don't protect themselves because they feel like they're enabling bad behavior. And then in some ways, I know this sounds really twisted, but in some ways getting pregnant is a punishment, and having an abortion is a further punishment for their sin.
Yeah.
And so we've got to flip this mindset around.
Well, yeah. And I love that though, what you're just talking about, because as we said, this is the whole reason why we're talking about this, is because it starts with the church.
Mm-hmm.
Like if the church started addressing these issues and really talking and creating these safe places, mm-hmm. I mean, we're knocking out almost half of the people that are actually getting
four
abortions. And here's the thing, like we know the value on a life. Like we know it's talked about throughout scripture. And something that even challenged me the other day that has been making me think so much around this is someone talked to me and they were like, well, do you know how in every single person they're made in God's image? Which means in every single person, there is an image of God that are you willing to find? And I'm thinking about it when you're looking at 60 million abortions happening. I'm like, there is 60 million images of God that well, are
contribution,
no longer,
yeah, contribution yeah, to society.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not it's, just the baby that's lost. A
no,
mother
exactly.
becomes a victim.
Yeah.
The birth father becomes a victim. The grandparents, society, who are robbed of everything mm-hmm. that was woven in that child of wonder and contribution, it's stripped away. And so, the flip side is, we got to talk to the church.
Yeah.
Because, and I just want to read something because I really put a lot of time into this, but I wrote in Our Cry for Justice in the Face of Injustice, let's remember there are those who for whatever reason felt they had no other recourse. And that's what we want to speak to. We want them to know they have another recourse.
Yeah.
Shame and fear are hard taskmasters that can drive all of us to do the otherwise unthinkable. Mm-hmm. It's time to heal rather than divide. It's time to support avenues of adoption, which I'm going to tell you, foster care. There are so many children in foster care that would love to be adopted, you know, because people are like, adoption's too expensive. Well, not through foster care. You actually get paid to adopt children. So foster care rather than picket abortion clinics. And when I say picket, I'm not talking about the people that are there to love and tell people that we want to help you. We want to support you. We want to be there for you long term. I'm talking about the people that are there saying, you're a baby murderer. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. It's time to confront the spirit of murder in our own hearts that would cause us to hate people. How they talked about mayors, how they talked about legislators, how they've talked about mothers that have made these choices or women who have made these choices. We cannot hate the people we have to hate, the acts. We are warned that everyone who hates his brother or sister is a murderer. And they have no murder has any eternal life abiding in them. So we have to understand that there is a spirit of hatred in our nation, a spirit of division, and a spirit of murder. Mm-hmm. And it comes out in many different ways. People slander one another. People attack one another. People try to destroy one another. And we are not going to give in to that, because that is the accuser of the brethren. We're going to be those who stand in the gap, heal the breaches, and come up with solutions.
Yep. Yeah, and it's not dependent on who's the president at the time. It's not dependent on the bills that are passed. It's not dependent on any. It's not dependent on what state you live in. I mean, we live in Colorado, where abortion, you know, full term abortion has been legal for some time now. Yeah. So
they just didn't light up monuments and celebrate, so it didn't hit on the radar.
Yeah, exactly. Or smile when they're doing it. But it doesn't matter any of that stuff. It matters what the church is going to do. And it's the church has to stop thinking that the policies, everything that's being passed, everything being done by the government is the final say so.
That's one thing we do.
Yeah.
But we have to support it with love. Right. Absolutely. So we want to do whatever, like whenever God gives us the ability to vote, we should vote.
Yeah.
But it doesn't stop there.
No.
Yeah. And I think that's what the mistake is. And then this was a wake up call. Mm-hmm. People were like, oh my gosh, how'd this happen? Well, it happened because God is very clear that when my people are called by my name, humble themselves, seek my face and turn from their own wicked ways, that God will hear from heaven and heal our land. Yeah. And we are so focused on what everybody else isn't doing right. We're so busy pointing out what everybody else's wicked ways are that we, God's people, because the Bible says when the righteous rule, and we don't rule by necessarily being elected. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's great if you have elected, but you rule in the spirit. When the righteous rule, the people rejoice. And so we're supposed to have this atmosphere of pro-life, whether it's refugees, whether it's the poor, whether it's the disenfranchised, whether it's women, whether it's men, whether it's young, whether it's old, whether it's women who go to the church or women that are outside of the church, like how we should be loving and welcoming anybody who finds themselves in a crisis situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, adoption has been a great gift to our family.
Yeah.
You know, we have a beautiful niece because a little girl who was 13 found out she was pregnant and went in to have an abortion at 6 months, and she was too far along. Yeah. And because of that, one of our family members was able to welcome a little girl into their life. Yeah. And, you know, here's the thing. There are so many other options. And, you know, I think that that's a really important thing to talk about.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about, so like from the perspective and the point of view as sons and daughters, as we want to start having these good conversations and start having the right conversation with the right people. How would you foresee navigating those conversations? Because I think oftentimes when we can kind of, I know from my perspective, as you can come in as a male perspective and kind of try to give some kind of weight to it or give some kind of say to it, you can oftentimes be shut off because you can feel you can come across as maybe you're not being in support of women at all. And you know, you can be like, I mean, I'm all for, you can be all for women speakers. You can be all for all these things for women. But if you are not for abortion, then you're completely against women's rights, it seems like.
Right.
And so how do we navigate those conversations when we are trying to have healthy conversations with other sons and daughters or with people that are not maybe not walking with God?
Well, I think one of the most important things, if we want to have conversations, is we truly need to have conversations, not win a fight, not win an argument. Good. We don't go into this conversation saying, I'm going to prove you wrong. We're going to actually listen to people. We're going to make them feel heard, because I know just for my own self, if I have a disagreement with my husband and I can see on his face that he is formulating his answer when I'm actually trying to be heard, then it's going to all be lost. Yeah. So I think that we need to understand why women feel like maybe men don't have a say. Part of that is because most women have to handle that pregnancy on their own. Yeah. They have to handle that baby on their own. They get no support financially from the birth father's family, mm-hmm. financially from the birth father. So I think it's 80% of them have no involvement with the father. So they're kind of like, hey, this isn't you. This isn't going to cost you anything. Mm-hmm. I think another thing is we have to say, if we're really for women, is abortion good for women? Does it enhance their life? Does it make them stronger? And they're finding out that there's a lot of trauma after abortion. There's actually something that is called post-abortive stress syndrome. It's under the PTSDs, that it is a real issue. I had women, so many women, that it broke my heart, that said they felt like they'd hollowed out their soul. So many women that said, for $500, I gave away my legacy, and I believed a lie. And I do think we have to understand that there are crisis moments in our life, crisis moments when we feel like we are alone and isolated and afraid. We're making huge decisions. You can't expect people to make good decisions if they don't feel loved and supported. So when we make women feel loved and supported, then they're going to make good decisions. One of the pastors that we used to work with, his wife's sister found herself pregnant, and she came home and told her parents, I'm pregnant. And the parents just said, we love you. We love this baby. We're going to figure out what we need to do. They immediately built a wing onto their house, put a nursery with the daughter's room, and never made her feel shame, helped her, supported her with childcare so that she could get her college education. And she ended up getting married to a guy that was just crazy about adopting this baby girl. Yeah. I also remember one of your babysitters. I mean, like, we have to understand these are decisions that one of your babysitters went on a spring break somewhere and came home pregnant. And when the ministry that she was working for, when the leader found out, he put his arm around her, stood her up in front of the entire staff, and said, she is family.
Yeah.
She is family, and we are going to walk alongside of her. We are going to be there for her. And she was just felt so loved and so supported. But I'm telling you what, if she did not know that somebody would have put their arm around her and loved her and said, no one will talk bad about her. We're going to celebrate her courage in this situation. And then she ended up getting married a couple of years later and continuing to build her family. Yeah. And so there's beautiful things that can happen when people know they are loved, that they're supported, that they're not judged. Mm-hmm. You know, and so we have to understand that the women find themselves in a very frightening experiencing. Yeah. You know, as a woman, to think that it would be easier to abort a baby than experience the gossip and shame, that's really terrifying. And I found this, and I don't mean this mean, but when people in the church are mean, they seem like they're way meaner, because it's like they attach the God thing to it, and it manipulates and spins things in such a way that people feel overwhelmed with shame. Yeah. I know that when I was a pastor's wife on staff, there were two pastor's wives that had abortions that were there on staff with me.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's very common.
Well, yeah, no, and it's it really hits you that those are the two options, like what you're just saying, mm-hmm. is it's either go through with the abortion or live with the shame. Mm-hmm. And that's just, I mean, that hits me deep, just knowing those are the two options. So if you are someone or have a friend that's considering an abortion, what should you do?
Well, first and foremost, I think you need to tell your friend that you love them
and
you're going to come around them. and you're going to get them whatever help they need, whatever help they need. And then there are tons of organizations. There's one, and we can actually put this on as a link in the podcast, but there's one I did a fundraiser for in Dallas. I think it's Grace or something, but we'll get the information on it. Yeah. But outside of Colorado, you can go to something called Visit CareNet. So there's CareNet where you can find out actually, you know, how to get help, how to get support. Yep. And then inside Colorado, there is youhavealternatives.org as well as, you know, the pro-life movement. So STT testing, post-abortion counseling. So they're not just like, oh, we'll only love you if you keep your baby, but they're going to actually be there, you know, to help you navigate some different things and pregnancy options.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're a Christian and you've had an abortion, we have to understand it's not like it's the unpardonable sin.
Yeah. Nope.
And I'm going to, you know, Jesus has already forgiven you, but the big challenge is, can you forgive yourself?
Yeah.
Can you forgive yourself? Especially in a climate like this, to be able to forgive yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, Jesus always says, I do not condemn you. That's the Jesus. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. Uh-huh. And then he adds this vote of confidence, go and sin no more. Yeah. He doesn't say, I condemn you. You're never going to change.
Yeah.
You were a murderer, an abortion. You were a seduct, whatever. He never labels us according to what we've done. He invites us to leave a life in the shadows and to move into a time of light. So he says, go and sin no more. And then he didn't stop there. He said, I am the light in the world. I am the light of the world. And you know, you experience darkness. I know you might even have nightmares, but Jesus is saying, you don't have to live in that shadow anymore. I don't condemn you. And He's also saying, now you can leave this place of darkness and shame, and you can move into the light of life. And that is what he's always saying to us, because he wants us to live our lives at the best. And none of us were ever created to shed innocent blood. None of us were ever created to live under constant shame. None of us were ever created to live conflicted as a woman, that we are a giver of life and a taker of life. That's a very hard thing for a woman to carry inside of her. And I've had so many women that told me they've had abortions 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and never been able to totally forgive themselves.
Yeah.
You don't have to punish yourself anymore.
No.
You don't have to wear that shame. You don't have to pay for what you did. You can't. You can't. You need to just give it to Jesus and rise up from that place and move forward. And I would also challenge you to redeem it. I love how David says, cleanse me and I'll be clean. But he didn't stop there. He said, then will I show transgressors your ways. You have a story to tell. You can redeem what you went through. You can share it with other women who maybe feel isolated and alone in shame, or you can help girls that are making these horrible decisions, frightened and isolated. You can come alongside them and help them to make a decision for life.
Yeah. Yeah. And a practical way just for you as sons and daughters, just being able to help out, you know, if you're married, I mean, I would encourage you guys to talk about, you know, maybe adopting a kid. And if you're single, you know, obviously you can't adopt a kid, but you can go and volunteer, really help out, these areas that are trying to, you know, be there for these women. Yeah, and then also, make sure you're working with your local church, to create safe environments that are not going to be shameful, environments where these...
And provide for single moms.
Yeah, provide for single moms.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I know this is a difficult topic, but hopefully you found a few practical strategies to help and support women in your community who may be in crisis. Please, 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 if you know someone who may need to hear what we discussed in this episode, be sure to share it. As always, we love to hear from you, so be sure to drop us a comment on iTunes or write a review and rate the show. It helps us get the word out. That's all for today, but remember, you are a messenger to the people in your world. Your life is a message. So lean into God's grace and watch your world change. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Messenger Podcast. Let us know your thoughts by leaving a review, and be sure to subscribe and share these episodes through iTunes. You can connect with us through Facebook, Instagram, and through our website at messengerinternational.org. Until next time.